You are listening to Packers Talk Radio Network. PackersTalk.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers, yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice, hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If the Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
You have that franchise quarterback. Everything else is made so much
easier. Of course, I don't think it's controversial. You know, they're my opinions, and I'm not going to argue.
Raise the bait. Feel free and tell us what you think.
Well, I don't agree with the fact that you just blatantly cheated.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to your new favorite show. We are From the Benches. I am your host, Jacob Westendorf, as always, here in the beautiful Rockford, Illinois. Going through some thunderstorms right now, actually. Joined with me, as always, is Ross Uglum. Ross, how you doing?
I'm doing great. The weather's fine. Did a lot of show prep this evening, so I feel like we're ready to really produce.
I certainly hope that is the case. We have been talking already for 45 minutes, so hopefully that leads to some good content for you guys. And our other host, of course, is Ryan Hillsland in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Ryan, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine. I had a good week. I gave my first brewery tour at Restaurant 3 on Saturday, and I think I only sucked a little bit, so it was. I've had a good week since we last recorded.
Good week for Ryan's always a good thing, and I know he's got to be to work here in about 5 hours, so I'm sure he's stoked about that as we speak.
Yeah.
And speaking of things that make me happy, JerMichael Finley was in town in Green Bay, Wisconsin this week to see Green Bay doctors. There were some conflicting reports on whether or not he was actually scanned. Could have been just a routine checkup, but it does show that the Packers are at least attempting to have him cleared. I think it will take some time, but ultimately, if you are on the bring back JerMichael bandwagon like I am, this is good news for you. I thought it was interesting to read through some things. JerMichael Finley, obviously, if you follow his Twitter account, has some cryptic tweets out there recently. He puts a bunch of stuff about how he's coming to Green Bay and how he posted a picture yesterday of Aaron Rodgers and him, like, shoulder bumping each other and said 12 plus 88 equals question mark. So a lot of interesting things on the JerMichael Finley front. And the other thing is Victor Aiyewa was released to open up one roster spot. So the Packers now have 89 on their 90-man roster. Whether or not that means anything as far as Finley goes remains to be seen. But, Ross, what are your overall thoughts on this entire weird situation of where in the world is JerMichael Finley?
Well, I think, you know, Finley's maybe a little – either Finley or Finley's team is a little bit smarter than, you know, he kind of lets on. I really think this is – at least an attempted PR campaign to drum up some interest and drum up some positive feedback from the fans on him returning to the team, which I think is kind of unnecessary. I really do believe Mike McCarthy when he says that if JerMichael's cleared, he really wants him back on the team. And I think everybody really wants him back on the team. Where the concern is, obviously, is financially. I mean, the Packers have about $15.5 million in projected salary cap space available, and really have two and probably three guys that they have a high priority as far as re-signing is concerned. I mean, they really do want to get Randall Cobb and Jordy Nelson redone, and I would think that, you know, pending another disaster, and I would guess that this one won't get done until at least midseason because of his injury history. But I think they'd really like to get Brian Bulaga done if he can prove that least reasonably healthy. So I just find it very, very unlikely that they are able to come to long-term agreements with Cobb, Nelson, Finley, and Bulaga, you know, unless they all agree to take a pretty big pay cut, you know, kind of for the good of the team, which, let's be honest, Nelson already did that. I don't think they went to him and told him you're going to have to take less if we're going to keep winning, but, you know, because he wasn't as established then as he was now, but I will say that deal he signed, when he signed it, I thought was, you know, a very team-friendly deal and kind of a team thing to do for Nelson, you know, and it was obviously, you know, made me happy. I would never, ever expect to do the same thing. You know, if someone told me to take a pay cut for the betterment of the team, I would have a hard time doing that. So anytime these guys don't ask for the moon and keep the Packers in good financial position to compete, you know, I really do appreciate that kind of thing as a fan.
Well, yeah, the extension part is obviously going to be interesting. One thing that kind of leaves me optimistic, I think, as far as the Finley situation goes, is at this rate, if he does get a deal and get cleared, it'll probably be 1 year with a lot of incentives, but I'm just speculating at this point because I don't know. Maybe he could get a big five-year deal from somewhere. I know Seattle showed interest in him. The Giants need a tight end, for example. That's an old Packers coach out there as their offensive coordinator now, but Ryan, what are your thoughts on the where in the world is JerMichael Finley scenario here?
Well, I mean, it's encouraging to see that he's in Green Bay doing things with the team. I think that it shows, I mean, obviously, JerMichael has an interest in coming back. He just wants to play football, by all accounts. What I'm encouraged by is that the Packers are bringing him back to do, you know, whether it was a full-on physical to try to clear him or whether he was just coming in for an update, you know, from the medical team, I'm just glad that the Packers are willing to do that. They're willing to do the due diligence and make sure they know whether or not he's going to be worth the risk. It's, you know, I'm glad he's not just being thrown to the wind and saying, they're saying that, oh, he's got an injury, we're just going to cast him off and move on. I'm glad that they're giving him a shot. They're coming in. They want to know. They want to know as much information as possible. It's encouraging to me that if he is healthy, they're going to give him a fair chance, and they're not just going to cast him off. So I'm not really concerned as to the extent of his visit in Green Bay. And as far as the roster opening with the release, it kind of seems like that isn't really the way they do it. It seems like there's always, you always get the signing and then the release first. Maybe I'm misspeaking on that, but it seems like you're always, the signing always breaks and then the undercard to the signing is, oh, and this guy's getting released because of the signing. It doesn't seem like the guy getting released to make room on the roster is the part that breaks the story to me. So, you know, not a super eventful visit to Green Bay for JerMichael, it doesn't seem like, but I am glad that the Packers are taking time to make sure they're making a good decision on a guy I'm really a fan of. So I'm encouraged by the event of JerMichael's visit to Green Bay.
Will certainly be something to watch going forward. As I noted the last time we recorded, based on my eye accounts and Rob Demosky's tweets, JerMichael Finley does still have a locker in the Packers locker room. So whether that means anything or not remains to be seen. Right now what we want to do is take a moment to mention there's a Gilbert Brown football camp being put on by our sponsor, Mark Mayfield. We will tweet out those details to you more so. Ross, if you have more information, feel free to share it now.
Yeah, it's towards the end of July, and I actually spoke with Mark a little bit earlier this evening. I think he'll come on the show sometime between now and those camps and kind of talk a little bit more and speak from a position of a little bit more knowledge and kind of share with you listeners what's going on there, but Gilbert Brown's hosting a football camp, and there's also a tumble or amp it up tumble and cheer camp as well. So that'll be something. But you know, we always appreciate the Mayfield Sports Marketing Group as one of our primary sponsors, and just wanted to pass that along.
Okay, so there we have that. Again, we will tweet out the details to you as we get them, and if we do get a chance for Mark to come on the show, we'll be happy to have him promote his camp. Now we're going to go behind the bench, and we're going to preview Ross's upcoming series on PackersTalk.com, talking about the top five summer battles. Basically, it's going to come out every Friday after this Friday's preview post. This week, Ross, you want to tell us what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, this week I am going to do the preview post, so I'm going to do it in kind of a similar fashion as if those of you listening are regular readers. First of all, thank you. I do appreciate that. But second of all, if you kind of paid attention to my off-season needs, how that went, where I basically listed the five needs and then each Friday went in depth on those needs leading up to the draft. And then after the draft and after, you know, the free agent signings, did kind of an audit and see how we did. So that's where we'll go. I mean, we'll have the preview post this Friday, and then I'll kind of get deep into each five battles over the course of those Fridays. And then, you know, after training camp and after it starts being decided who wins some of these, you know, we'll have sort of a wrap-up. And you know, obviously that'll be part of our season preview because we'll be – you know, into August at that point. So it should be exciting. I'm excited to dig into it and kind of offer my thoughts and maybe go back and watch a little bit of film from the 2012 and 2013 seasons to generate some of those opinions. So be sure to check those out. And like I said, that'll be part of the Packers Football Friday segment that I am responsible for every Friday.
And we all know Ross always has interesting thoughts, so feel free to read those whenever, wherever, and give us feedback on them, because we'd love to talk about that as well. But now what we're going to talk about is our favorite position battle going into training camp. There's a lot of options. Mine, personally, it's the position I played in high school. It's the only thing I know. It's the offensive line, and most notably the center position. Corey Linsley, J.C. Tretter, maybe Don Barclay. I'm not really buying into that a whole lot yet because he was absolutely miserable at center in training camp a season ago. But his name is being mentioned there for now. Right now, I think it boils down to J.C. Tretter versus Corey Linsley, the fifth-round pick out of Ohio State. It's going to be an interesting battle because the center position has become more valued over the years with these multiple fronts, having to identify the mic, slide protection packages. Tretter didn't play a whole lot last year. Linsley obviously hasn't played a down in the NFL. I think it's going to be interesting to watch who wins that battle, and whoever it is going to have, I mean, they're being thrown right to the fire because their first game is against the Seattle Seahawks and their complex scheme and their multiple rushers and multiple fronts and things of that nature. So the inexperience at center worries me a little bit for that first game, but overall the Packers have done very well with centers over the last few years. Evan Dietrich Smith was above average. Scott Wells was about that too. The only really bad move they've made recently was signing Jeff Saturday, which, I mean, at the time, you can't really fault him a whole lot for it. He just didn't play very well. But I think the center battle is going to be heated. I think you'll see, you know, one player probably get every start in the preseason. And if you see the guy who's starting in the preseason, that's probably who's going to end up starting the season. And then they'll go from there. But right now, I think ideally J.C. Tretter wins that job. He's got a little more experience in the fact that he's at least been in the locker room for years. But, or for a year, excuse me. Going forward, I don't know. I think it'll be a fun battle to watch. I think Linsley is, you know, he's a mountain of a man. He's got strength of an ox. I mean, he's just an impressive physical human being as far as strength goes. So I'm looking forward to that. Ross, I got a feeling you're going to talk about your boy Colt Lierla here.
Well, not just about Lierla, but I really do think that the tight end position as a whole is the most fascinating. You know, I occasionally think around over at PackersNews.com with that very actually effective tool they have, that roster builder. I don't know if you guys have played around with it, but it accurately calculates cap space and dead money based on the cuts that you make to reduce the team from 90 to 53 men. And if you don't add JerMichael Finley to this mix, the tight end group interesting group. You know, I happen to think that currently the player with the most talent is Colt Laierla, but he's by no stretch of the imagination a lock to make the team, and it would be a very, very big upset, you know, were he to be the number one tight end going into the season. But I've also, you know, put together rosters where Corliss, where the supposed starter, Andrew Corliss, you know, could be right on the cut line. I think that, you know, one of my guys is the converted basketball player, Brandon Bostic from Newberry College, and he could end up on the cut line as well. The one guy that I feel like is safe is the guy that probably has the least amount of receiving talent, and that's Ryan Taylor, just because Ryan Taylor, you know, is one of the better special teams players on the Packers, and they need to continue to carry guys that can excel, because as many Packer fans would tell you, special teams has not been, you know, one of the strengths of this team over the course of the past 5 to 8 years. In fact, you know, special teams coordinator Sean Slocum isn't really one of the more popular guys, along with Dom Capers in Green Bay. So I think, as crazy as it sounds, Ryan Taylor is probably the closest thing to a roster lock. I would be very surprised if Corliss was released, although I could see a situation in which if JerMichael Finley came back, they might release Corliss and just go with Finley, Bostic, Laierla, and Taylor. I don't know. I mean, it would seem, considering that Corliss was just re-signed, and maybe this is another one of those years where they keep five tight ends, maybe this means the end of John Kuhn, and they just go with Laierla and Corliss as the lead blockers. This whole thing just really has my head spinning, and that's what makes it so exciting and so intriguing to watch, it'll be something that I pay attention to all summer long.
There you have it. Ryan, what do you got going here?
Well, Jacob, I do appreciate that you are willing to admit that center is the only thing that you know, so I'll go ahead and disregard your opinion on everything else going forward.
As you should.
But I'm really looking forward to the competition for the roster all the way across the defensive line. Basically, you're looking at B.J. Raji, who we think is going to be the nose tackle in the base defense, and then a bunch of guys who are either just coming up or just coming off of injury or are rookies or are, you know, just guys we think have a bunch of talent. We obviously, all three of us think Mike Daniels is an up-and-coming star on the defense. I think he's going to be a lock on the defensive line. But then you're looking at guys like Jarrell Worthy, who's been around for a little while but hasn't been healthy, but he's a guy who I loved coming out of college, competing with, you know, Kyrie Thornton, our draft pick who's going to compete on the defensive line. Dayton Jones is a former first-round pick. There's just a bunch of different combinations I'm looking at along the defensive line that really intrigue me. I'm really excited to see how that plays out. And then you look at a guy who comes in as an undrafted free agent in Mike Pennell at 6'4", 330 pounds. He's out of a D2 school, but a really successful D2 school. It's if nothing else, an intriguing size combination. If he ends up being somebody who can contribute at that kind of size at the nose tackle, there's so many different combinations that I like off the defensive line. I'm really excited to see who steps up, whether it's Dayton Jones, who we all think can, whether it's Jarrell Worthy making a comeback story after a couple of unhealthy seasons, whether it's Mike Daniels blowing up and becoming a star on the defensive line. There's a lot of really great things that I think can happen on the defensive line. And being a former lineman myself, it's a position I know, and it's a position I'm going to be watching really closely, because I see a ton of talented players, and I see a bunch of different combinations that can be used in our defense to give us a really effective front. So defensive line is something I'm looking at really hard, and I'm going to be looking at it all off season and into training camp.
Okay, so there we have that. We got the defensive line, we've got the center position, and the tight end position as training camp battles going forward. Now we're going to discuss something a little off topic, but it is a little interesting to say the least. It's called What's in a Number? There's a bunch of various interesting number assignments. The first thing I want to know is, do you guys think it is interesting that Donald Driver and James Lofton's number 80 was issued to Justin Perillo? I'm not sure how I'm pronouncing the name, if it's wrong or not, but I'm going to say, no, I don't think it's that interesting. I know, you know, Lofton, Driver, great in their own rights, but, you know, there's a couple numbers that you're not supposed to give out in Green Bay, either the ones that are retired or some of the ones that are unofficially retired. For example, one that I did think was interesting last year was when they assigned Paul Hornings number 5. That's a number that's not really supposed to be given out. But Driver and Lofton, again, both great in their own right, but, I mean, as much as that is the case, I don't think that those guys are Hall of Fame players, so to speak. Donald Driver, more specifically, I think Driver's really good, but I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, for example. So I'll say, no, I don't think it's that interesting. I think that the Packers are usually really smart with these number assignment type of things, so not a big deal to me. Ross, what do you think?
No, I mean, I get that they went, you know, that they didn't issue the number in 2013 after Drive did make his official retirement, and I appreciate that. I do. I mean, I think that Green Bay has a very intelligent sense of retirement. You know, obviously, you know, Brett's number isn't retired yet, but you damn sure haven't seen anybody wear number 4. And I just think that, plus, here's the deal. I got to tell you, if I don't think that there's a snowball's chance in hell of this happening, but if Justin Perillo makes the team, I'm going to guess he's going to get reassigned. If he makes the team, I would almost guarantee that he does not stay number 80.
Yeah, that's probably the case. Ryan, what do you think here?
Well, I know it's a small rumbling, but you see people talking about whether or not the Packers will officially retire 80 with Driver and Lofton. I guess assigning 80 in the offseason is a sign that that's probably not going to happen. I know it's not possible because he's a receiver, but I think the only number that you would have to get really excited about is if they would have given Jared Aberderis number 4. I think that's the only situation where I would be up in arms and freaking out and wondering, oh, why are they assigning this number to this sixth round pick, whatever, this undrafted rookie, whoever it is, why are we assigning numbers? Like, it's the off season. There are only so many numbers you can give. I don't put a lot of stock in numbers assigned. When we get a little farther down the line, like Ross said, if Perillo makes the roster and still has number 80, then maybe I'll have a conversation about whether or not he should have 80 or not. But at this point, he can wear 80 in OTAs and rookie stuff. I'm not going to get worked up about it. So I don't put a ton of stock into roster into a uniform number assignments at this point in the offseason.
So I got a feeling
they're just giving Aberderis 80. It's against Wisconsin State law to get mad at him.
Apparently, yeah, that would be the case, so that would have been interesting. So I got a feeling how I know the next two parts of this segment are going to go, but we're going to talk about it anyway. Do you think it's interesting that JerMichael Finley's number hasn't been given out? And in addition to that, do you think it's interesting that Johnny Jolly and Ryan Pickett's numbers have given out? And I say this goes back to the whole locker thing I was discussing. JerMichael still has one. Pickett and Jolly do not in the locker room. I think that that speaks to their intentions. Maybe I'm reading too much into it. But I think that JerMichael Finley has at least some aspirations, possibility of being back in Green Bay. And I think the Packers have turned the page on both Ryan Pickett and Johnny Jolly, at least for the time being, barring a disaster. If an injury strikes, Maybe the Packers can bring those two, one of those two guys back or both back if it's really, really drastic. But I think that the Packers have at least some intentions of bringing back Finley, and I don't think they have a whole lot of intentions of bringing back Jolly or Pickett. So that's my take on it. Ross, what is yours?
See, I agree with you. I do find it interesting, and I kind of find it telling. I hate it when people say that, you know, this Thompson-McCarthy regime is, like, shady. They're not shady. They're just quiet. Like, when was the last time that one of those two came out and said something and it was a bold-faced lie? Saying that that a whole lot doesn't get out of 1265 or Lombardi, but when it does get out, it's usually pretty truthful. So when Mike McCarthy says, I still view Jermichael Finley as a Green Bay Packer, to me that means, hey, if we can get a deal done and if his neck is okay, he's going to be a Packer. And I think that they are going to move on from Jolly and Pickett. But here's the other thing that you brought up that I was going to bring up and that I really appreciate is nobody else has signed Pickett or Jolly. And the Packers have a history of doing this where if something bad happens where they have an injury, they have these ex-Packers that they will call. You'll remember that they did call Mark Tauscher. You'll remember that they drag Ryan Grant off the street when they had a bunch of injuries. In fact, I think they kind of unretired Amon Green one season when they had a bunch of injuries. So I really do think that that's a possibility that Pickett and Jolly go unsigned into the season. And, you know, God forbid somebody gets injured on the defensive line, you could see a phone call made to one of those two pretty quickly.
Absolutely agree with that. Another example that I thought, the Packers did that with Jarius Wynn, too, I believe, is another example. And they did do that with Amon Green, to answer your question. Ryan, what do you think on this situation?
Yeah, I think it's significant in that, like we've been talking about a lot, Jermichael is kind of a just-in-case. Like, there's room on the roster just in case Jermichael's Finley. There's room for him to have 88 back just in case he's healthy. It's, you know, like I said earlier, I'm glad the Packers are kind of not officially holding that spot open for him, but they're keeping an open mind in that they can, if he does end up being cleared and healthy and ready to go, there's going to be an avenue for which they can bring him back fairly seamlessly. He's going to step in, get his own number, be ready to go, and it's not going to be a problem. So I don't think it isn't unintentional that they didn't give out number 88 to a rookie or to whoever. Because I think they do still think that there's a chance that Jermichael's going to come back. In terms of Jolly and Pickett, I like you guys said, I think they're kind of emergency contacts at this point. I don't think they're expecting either of those guys to be needed. I don't think they're still negotiating with them to get them on the roster now, because, you know, it's close to full, obviously, but it's, you know, I think, you know, I said a couple minutes ago that I don't think roster assignment or the number assignments are important at all, but when it comes to players who may be coming back or may not be coming back, I think there is a little bit of significance there. Had they given out 88, I think that would have been a situation where it would have been indicative to what they want, what their plans were with Jermichael. The fact that they didn't give it out basically plays right along with what I thought, in that they're kind of just waiting and seeing. But I don't think that's the case with Jolly or Pickett. Like you guys said, those are emergency numbers that they might call it down the road, but I don't think they're worrying too much about what numbers those guys are wearing.
And I think that that's the right decision at this point, too. I know Jolly has a great story behind him and overcoming his drug addiction, but at this point, the Packers are younger, faster, more athletic on the defensive line, and I think that's the route they want to go. But we'll see. A lot can change with one injury, as we know. Now we're going to move.
I tell you what, though. Oh, if one thing I will say is if B.J. Raji were to blow out his knee, I would want them to call Ryan Pickett the next day.
Yeah, that would definitely be an interesting scenario. I obviously hope that doesn't happen. I have some hope for B.J. Raji still, but we'll see. And now we're going to move to the From the Benches Summer Conversation Series. Obviously, dog days of summer. Now the draft's over. There's not a whole lot to really discuss. But we're going to stay in our wheelhouse, which is Packers history of the last 25 years. We're not going to have a chance to discuss these kinds of things during the season or during the draft process, so we're going to do it now. So the question this week is, what is your favorite transaction of the era of Ron Wolf, Mike Sherman, and Ted Thompson as the general manager? And mine, I've often said he's my favorite player in Packers history. Number 92, the Minister of Defense, Reggie White. I think there's so many stories behind that that just are hilarious. They're good. You know, the Reggie said that, you know, he was going to go where God told him to go. And Mike Holmgren left him a message that said, "Reggie, this is God. I want you to play in Green Bay." I think that's really funny. Reggie White was instrumental in making it okay to come to Green Bay for some players. He was also instrumental in the invention of the Lambeau Leap along with Leroy Butler. Reggie White, without him, the Packers, they had their cornerstone on offense with Brett Favre. They needed a guy on defense. Without him, I don't think they win Super Bowl 31. He had 3 sacks in the Super Bowl. Jim Irwin's "Reggie got him again" is probably my favorite radio call of all time. Absolutely love the Reggie White signing by Ron Wolf in 1993. Ross, what do you got?
Well, I'm going to go not super under the radar, but still talk about something that was extremely effective. Back in 2008, you know, Rodgers had only played about 8 games that first year after, you know, the Favre saga. And Ted Thompson decided to give him a 5-year extension that put his contract at 6 years, $65 million. Now, what the Packers got out of that contract was only paying the best player in football $11 million a year, and that salary structure allowed them to build their team, win a Super Bowl, and also create a young and talented roster that, you know, has been competitive every year, despite absolutely having the worst injury luck in the NFL. I mean, they're the only team in the league that's made the playoffs all of the last 5 seasons. They're, you know, the 3 NFC North champions. They're an incredibly consistent program, and a lot of that has been based on Ted Thompson's, you know, conservative stewardship over the salary cap. And it's actually a trend right now, with the exception of maybe Eli Manning. These young QBs on cheap contract have really been doing a hell of a job, you know, winning championships. Aaron Rodgers won the title, making $11 million a year. I could be wrong, but I think Joe Flacco won the 2012 title on his rookie deal.
That was on his rookie deal.
It was? Okay.
Yes, sir.
And his, and then obviously Russ Wilson just won the Super Bowl on a mid-rounders rookie deal. So if you can get elite quarterback play coming in cheap, it's really easy to build an effective NFL roster. And that contract is, I think, one of the more underrated reasons that the Packers have this little, you know, mini dynasty type deal, at least as far as the NFC North is concerned.
Okay, and then we will move on to Ryan, and I got a feeling that everyone who listens to the show regularly knows exactly where he's going, but I won't spoil it. Ryan, go ahead.
You guys may be shocked to hear this, but my favorite transaction since I've been alive, basically, is the Packers getting Brett Favre.
Gasp.
And, yeah, really. The
the reason I'm a Packer fan. Weird that that was my favorite roster move. But more than I won't talk about how awesome Brett Favre is because I could do that for 2.5 hours and nobody would listen to this show. But more than just simply being a trade for Brett Favre, who ended up being the face of the franchise forever, it was a really bold move by Ron Wolf at the time. You have a guy who was taken in the second round the year prior, and you trade a first-round pick for him. It was just really a leap of faith, basically, by Wolf. Because if something like that happened today, people on Twitter and pundits and everybody on TV would be freaking out because this guy made, you know, such a mistake in terms of the value of draft picks and things like that. He basically took a risk on a guy he had a ton of faith in, and you know, it ended up working out, obviously. But you know, that's part of what made, you know, Ron Wolf such a such a solid GM. He would take risks, but at the same time make smart moves, and it's part of the reason that I think Thompson is making some great moves this offseason in signing a Julius Peppers, making a really smart move to improve the team, and being a little bit bold at it. I like a GM who is going to stick to his guns. He's going to make smart decisions, but he's going to take a risk every once in a while when he thinks it's worth it. It, you know, Ron Wolf didn't go out every year and trade picks for guys who've been in the league for 1 year. He made it for a guy he really believed in Brett Favre, and I think there's a little bit of a parallel. Now, I'm not going to say Julius Peppers is going to come in and be the face of the Green Bay Packers for 20 years, but you see Thompson go so many years without signing a free agent and not making a splash and sticking to his guns, and then kind of out of nowhere he goes in and drops the hammer on a Julius Peppers signing. I see kind of that same mentality, saying, this is a guy who can help our team. I'm going to make this move. I know it's not necessarily what I usually do, but this is what I'm going to do. And I see that in the Ron Wolf trade for Brett Favre. You know, when that move was made, you didn't have the long track record for Ron Wolf as a GM, so it was a move that was going to define his legacy, really, no matter what. If he flops on that trade, he's second-guessed forever. If Favre bombs and starts 7 games and wins 3 and never ends up being anything, Ron Wolf probably gets run out of town before 1996. It's a huge move in Packers history. It brought my favorite player to town. It made me a Green Bay Packers fan. But there's just so much more to the transaction itself that I'm a fan of that makes that my favorite transaction of the, we'll call it, the modern era of the Green Bay Packers.
So there you have it, the Brett Favre trade, the Reggie White signing, and the first Aaron Rodgers extension are our favorites. And we'll do this again next week. What we're discussing remains to be seen. Maybe we can do something from pre-show talk, who knows. But now we're going to move to, it's my turn this week for You're Going to Want to Cut That. And what I want to discuss kind of has to deal with Colt Lyerla, but not necessarily just him. There will be one media pundit in particular that I am discussing, and he shall remain nameless. He's one of the Packers beat writers. But last week, he wrote a story on Lyerla talking about how basically Ted Thompson has gone to a win-at-all-cost kind of mode and saying that there isn't really a line for that, and how can you bring in this terrible guy who has a long list of track record and all these sorts of things. Listen, I totally understand the concern. of bringing in Elierla and someone who does have a legal list that is that long. But if there is one place where bringing a guy somewhere that can like that, that it can work for him, it is Green Bay, Wisconsin. And some past examples can include Corn Robinson, Johnny Jolly. I mean, there's other examples in Packers history where they ended up okay. And I know that Laierla hasn't really proven anything, but I also believe that we live in a world where nobody is perfect, and I don't understand how someone can sit up on this high horse and just simply say that bringing in Laierla is a terrible move because he's a bad person and isn't willing to change and blah, blah, blah. And I totally understand the concept of he's on about his fourth or fifth chance. But if there's one thing I've learned in the NFL, if you're talented, you're going to get a shot. Other examples include Alden Smith, all kinds of legal trouble he's in. Ray Rice, I think he did probably the worst thing of this entire offseason that wasn't connected to Aaron Hernandez, for example. And he's going to get a shot to play, obviously. People don't just cut players simply or not sign them, for example, just because they have a legal history. Jeremy Hill just got drafted, for example. He had some legal issues in college. I didn't see anybody writing a story about how he's a terrible person. So simply what I'm going to say, quit judging character before you see someone given a chance. Yeah, you may end up right, but if you're wrong, you're going to look bad. So what I'm going to say simply is, when it comes to sitting on your high horse, discussing what kind of person someone is and whether or not they're willing to change, Bob McGinn, you're going to want to cut that. Ross, I know you appreciated that. Please tell me you did.
I did. I can't stand sometimes when guys write and they just write in the tone that they think they're smarter than everybody else. And I'm not saying Colt Laierla is a good person, and I'm not saying he's a bad person, and I'm not saying I agree with a lot of the things he said or did, but like I wrote and like you said, if you're going to hide someone who's kind of a troubled person, Green Bay, Wisconsin's got to be the best place to do it as far as NFL cities are concerned. And 20-year-old kids do stupid stuff. I mean, I was 20. I did plenty of stupid stuff. And we didn't
do stupid
stuff
when we were 19, if I remember correctly.
Indeed. But I have a job. And, you know, there's no reason that Colt Laierla shouldn't have an opportunity to have a job in his chosen profession. So, you know, I agree with you, and I'm pretty firm in that belief.
Ryan, any closing thoughts?
Well, the condescending way in which he basically came off on that point, it just doesn't make any sense to me. He's the guy's coming in as an undrafted free agent signing from a tryout. This is the least possible risk you can place on a player, and I understand that he might be high risk, but do you think he's going to come in at training camp, go into the locker room, talk to Aaron Rodgers and say, hey, let's go do some blow quick tonight, and then all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers is going to fall apart because he gets a cocaine addiction? That's not going to happen. There's a pretty freaking solid, stable locker room in Green Bay right now, and I don't think a tryout signee is going to poison the locker room. I think if we get into training camp and Laierla shows any signs of being a locker room poison or being a problem or that he's not over all of the things that went wrong for him in Oregon, if any of those warning signs flash themselves, he's just going to be gone, and the team's going to go right back to the status quo as they were before he came in. So I don't see the risk to this at all.
No,
maybe 3 years down the road, maybe he's a model citizen for 3 years and becomes a player, and then some things resurface. But I just don't see the risk for this season. I don't see the point in criticizing the signing just because he's a risk factor. If they took him in the second round, fine. Flame all you want. Talk about how your priorities might not be in the right place, but this is the absolute minimum risk you're taking in a player. Just lay off and see what happens. I don't see the downside in taking this risk at all.
And one thing that you guys pointed out that I absolutely failed to, and for that I apologize, is the Packers did bring him in on a tryout, signed him for vet minimum, and at most this season they're asking him probably to be their third tight end. Maybe if he performs better, he could end up higher than that. No pun intended. But ultimately, he's not the face of their franchise. It's not like they drafted a quarterback that had those sorts of issues, number one overall. But that's gonna be the end of that segment. And with the end of that segment comes the end of today's show. Be sure to check out PackersTalk.com for all your latest Packers news and podcasts. Check out Ross's story that comes out Friday. It'll be the preview post for his new series. So that'll be interesting to watch. Send us feedback, questions, comments, concerns, all that stuff to our show at From the Benches. You can contact me individually at Jacob Westendorf, and then Ross you can contact at?
At Ross Huggle.
And Ryan at?
At Hillisland 358.
Until next time, as always, thank you for listening to From the Benches.
Are you looking for some signed Packer memorabilia?
Look no further than Waukesha Sports Cards.
If a Green Bay Packer can sign it, Waukesha Sports Cards has it.
Check our website for upcoming Packer player and legend signing.
Go to WaukeshaSportsCards.com.
Eddie Lacy, Mike Daniels, Gilbert Brown, Don Barclay, Micah Hyde, your Green Bay Packers. Yesterday's legends and today's superstars. From corporate or nonprofit events to private parties, add some spice. Hire a Packers player from Mayfield Sports Marketing. For details, just go to PackersTalk.com and click on Player Appearances.